on Family Guy, and Chad Gidden, who's a writer for Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and he used to write for Saturday Night Live. So we'll have that panel. And then after that, we'll have Iman Bowles, who is the president of Magnolia Pictures, and he'll be here. He's going to do a workshop on distribution. And then he's bringing a film with him called Permanent. It's never been released, so he'll be premiering that, and he'll give the intro to it as well. And then after that, we'll be at Feed and Seed for a party with Cece Adcock and the Lafayette Marquis and Curly Taylor and Zydeco Trouble, serving gumbo, another fun dance party, Louisiana Saturday night, which is always – we try to do that for our guests coming in. They love it. So, and then on Sunday, again, all day long, we'll have short films all day at The Hive again. And then we have a film that morning. Then we have our live podcast. We also have an acting improv workshop with Allison Becker. We have a crowdfunding workshop that can be across all sources, not just film. It can be music, and with an organization called Seed and Spark. So they're kind of like a Kickstarter, but for artists. And then we'll have our live music concert, which will be from like 6 to 11. Quintron is playing, and we have a few different musicians that will be out there playing. It's going to be a jam-packed fun time.
The days are just packed for the Screen Festival this year. And, you know, obviously you're mentioning there's a lot of fun times and partying times too, but that seems to be a part of the whole industry as well, where you're networking and making those connections and forming those relationships.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely a great time to network, but, I mean, it's also – something that we would go to anyway on a Louisiana night, you know? Mm-hmm. So, we try to make it as fun for the locals as for the people coming in town as well. And of course we want them to network and meet and dance with each other and, you know, but it's not just for artists and filmmakers and musicians, you know, it's for everyone who just wants to come out and enjoy themselves.
All right. That sounds like a good reason to attend the Screen Festival. Now you mentioned, quickly that there are films all day, short films, feature films. I assume that on your website you have a full list of the titles of these films.
Yes, full list. Mm-hmm. We have 5 short series, which will play twice throughout the weekend. So you'll have 2 times, you know, you'll have an opportunity. If you miss it one day, you can see it another day. The features will only be playing once, and most of them are on Saturday, but we do have one on Friday and one on Sunday. All of them are amazing films. I suggest going to the website and looking at the features. Like, you can click on features, and it'll show you just the feature films, but it'll also will have trailers on there. It'll give a description. It's a good way to just go and see what it is that you're interested in, because it's kind of a wide range. You know, we have documentary, comedy, thriller, horror. It's pretty much one for everything. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I know you don't want to play favorites, but do you have a couple maybe that you're really excited?
I mean,
that are coming?
I personally am a thriller. I like thrillers, and we're showing an Icelandic film called Rift that the filmmaker has actually been here in the past with a short film and a feature, and it's really, really good.
It's set in Iceland?
It's set in Iceland, so of course it's gorgeous, but it's also just beautiful. Yeah. But yeah, it's real creepy and uncomfortable, and the first time I watched it, when I got to the end, it was getting really late, and I had to wait. I was like, I'll just wait and watch this tomorrow.
Well, for a lot of people, you could just say you had me at Iceland. You know, that does seem to be the destination.
I know, and it's just such a beautiful, like, it looks so beautiful that I don't know. I'm really excited that he wanted, because it's doing amazing on the festival circuit. It's been playing all over the world. And I was, you know, super happy that he wanted to come back and submit, and also that, you know, he's doing so well because we've already shown some of his films before. So I think it's really fun to, like, watch the progression of a filmmaker like that.
Well, isn't that nice about a festival like this, that you do create those relationships mm-hmm. and people grow and return to the festival and you get to see how they develop
absolutely. As artists. It's exciting mm-hmm. for sure.
Mm-hmm. Again, if you are just tuning in, my guest is Julie Bordelon, who is the founder of the Southern Screen Festival. This is their 7th year. It takes place in downtown Lafayette this week, November 16th through the 19th. But the Cane Fire film this evening mm-hmm. is a part of the whole celebration of the week. And so if you already have a pass to that, you can go to see that film this evening
right.
as well.
Correct.
To get a pass, can you go to the website? Is that the best place to acquire one?
Yeah, on the website it'll explain how you can attend. But if you do have a pass, you get into every single event throughout the weekend. You also drink for free. You also eat for free. And you get free popcorn. But, you know, you get a lot of...
not have popcorn for a screen festival.
You get a lot of extra perks with mm-hmm. a pass. It definitely, if you're planning on coming to multiple things, it makes sense to get mm-hmm. that. Otherwise, if you just want to come for the day, we have day passes. Or if you just want to come to a nighttime event, you can, you know, pay at the door for those.
So any way you would like to come, anything that fits into your schedule, you have a way for people to do that.
Right. Yeah.
And you can go to the website. So having done this for 7 years... how are you feeling about the festival? I mean, obviously you're changing and again, trying to meet people where they are, searching for stories mm-hmm. On whatever platform. So that takes a lot of creativity and work on your part.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about it. I mean, I work in the film industry and music industry, so I'm able to meet a lot of people through other jobs. And, you know, it's all, like you said, like trying to keep up with things and like make sure things are fun and that people are even care or they're interested, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's a lot of times it's people that I meet working, like the guys, the TV writer panel, like I met the two of them this summer and thought that they're friends and they're hysterical. And, you know, to me, it's like even if you're not a writer, it would be such a fun thing to go and sit and watch. The guy who writes for Family Guy is over 100 voices on the show. So, you know, just like listening to him talk, you're like, oh wait.
Yes, you know? Recognize those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he's also an actor. Like I've recognized him from being in other things as well. But, you know, he's going to be talking mostly about Family Guy. But yeah, it's just I find those things to be fun and interesting, even if you're not a writer. You know, it's just a fun thing to go and
right. looking behind the curtain to see who's there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And if you like to watch those shows, you know, it's like hearing that creative process of storytelling is always interesting to me. So, you know, that's a lot of the people that come in. It's usually people that I've met before, and I'm like, oh, you're really interesting. You know, like I'd like to sit and listen to you talk. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely fun, a fun process of planning the whole thing. You know, it's always a lot of work and, you know, trying to raise money and do all of that fun stuff. Mm-hmm. But
you're paddling really hard behind the scenes.
Yeah, yeah, but it's still a fun, you know, we all have fun doing it, my crew, you know, and so, and I'm super thankful for them, of course. Mm-hmm. If you're listening, I love you.
Well, and I think what a great opportunity, not only just for those of us in the community who enjoy storytelling and screen artistry, mm-hmm. Just to enjoy this, but there are a lot of people, you know, in the Moving Image Arts program and people in our community who are interested in that field, but really don't fully realize all of the various things that can be done in the field.
Right.
Sometimes we're somewhat simplistic as to, well, there's a writer, there's an actor, but there's so much that happens behind the scenes. And some of these panels and the people who are coming will really make that, you know, more transparent to those interested in that industry.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one thing that I'm excited about with the live podcast, because I feel like that's been such a big thing. You know, people are really getting into listening to podcasts, but also making their own. That this is what a fun experience to like watch people do it live. And, you know, this group, their podcast is actually like a fiction story. It's like a science fiction story, actually.
What's the name of it?
It's called Mission to Zynxis or something. It's ZYXX. Mm-hmm. But it's hysterical. And you can, you know, it would be great for people to go and listen. You know, we've been pushing people to like go and check it out now, so that way they're kind of up with the story. But you don't have to necessarily follow. And like I said, they bring on a different famous comedian every episode and, like, have that person as a special guest. So they have to come up with their own character and, like, you know, perform it that way. I just think it's would be the funnest thing, you know. And it's a good way for people who are thinking about, like, well, how is that? I wonder how they're doing that. Or maybe I want to have a podcast, you know.
What does it look like behind just the audio that I hear?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this one's a little different just because it's a fictional story. But, like, they're coming with their own sound guy. They'll have all these special effects and, like, special sound effects and, like, things like that. I mean, I just think it's super fun. It's
interesting hearing you describe that because it almost takes you back to those early golden days of radio.
Which,
you
know, whenever I first spoke to the guy – so the guy who started the podcast – is an old friend that I met at South by Southwest years ago who is a producer for the podcast like This American Life and Serial. And so he kind of went off on his own. I mean, he's still a producer for them, but he was like, I'm gonna make my own. And so, yeah, it's just been like when I first talked to him about it, I'm like, no, let's do yours. Like, that sounds super fun. And he was like, yeah. He's like, it's kind of hard to explain. And I was like, it sounds like it's something I want to sit around the radio and listen to, like, in the 50s. And he was like, yeah, that.
Yeah. All those old radios are going to come back in style. I'm going to put our little, you know, whatever device behind them just so we can have
that feeling.
Yeah. Well, what a great opportunity. Again, Julie Bordelon is the director of the Southern Screen Festival. It's their seventh year. And as you can hear her describing, it's not just screens. It's all manner of ways of telling stories and platforms of telling stories, and local people as well as people from the national industry will be coming here this week. It runs the 16th through the 19th in downtown Lafayette. You can go to southernscreen.org for a complete listing of all of the films and activities and find out more about how you can get passes or day passes, however you would like to attend the festival. Well, Julie, thank you for your interest and your work over all of these years and the different ways that the festival has grown and changed and really been very practical and a whole lot of fun as well for everybody. So thank you so much for your work.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon are Kenneth Jenkins and Bree Castro. Kenneth Jenkins is the director, the coordinator of the dance program in the School of Music and Performing Arts. Bree is an alum of the program. She's also a guest choreographer for State of La Danse, and they are here to talk about the annual fall State of La Danse concert, which will be held this week, opens on the 16th and runs through the 19th, I believe.
Through the 20th.
So several performances, opportunities we have to see that. Before we talk about some of the specific pieces that you can see in State of La Danse, remind us, Kenneth, of how the dance and choreography program fits into the School of Music and Performing Arts, and just a bit about the tradition of the program, because it is long and renowned.
Yes, this is our 24th year of this concert series, but as you know, there's been dance on this campus, I believe, for almost 100 years.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's very amazing.
Forward-thinking.
And unique, mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. Of those pioneering women primarily that went across the country founding dance programs. In our case, Evelyn Elizabeth Lockman was seminal here in getting the program off the ground. And as I said, this is our 24th year of this concert series. And this year really is a good example of fulfilling our mission in this concert series, which is threefold. One is to present a program that is balanced between classical ballet and modern dance. The second is to balance the reconstruction of recognized masterworks with the works that are commissioned original works of Louisiana emerging artists. And then the third thing we want to accomplish in every concert is that it is challenging and educational for our students, that students get to work with an array of choreographers who have very different approaches to their work, and that that leads to our students being even more well-rounded when they leave.
And yeah. We'll have an opportunity to see just how talented and well-rounded they are.
Yes.
Choreographers like Bree, who went through the program, will be participating
exactly.
in this concert. So tell us about what part of your mission is to introduce the students and our community to classic choreography. Mm-hmm. And this year you all are putting on a pretty amazing piece, Les Sylphides, mm-hmm. which sounds like it might be your typical, you know, I don't know, classical ballet, but it's not. It really was a really harbinger for some modern ballet.
Absolutely.
Tell us about the piece, when it was first created, and, mm-hmm. and why it's such an important piece.
Well, Sylphides had a number of lives and a number of different titles even. And the one that we are doing is the 1909 version. And its claim to fame is that this was the first abstracted ballet, that this was not about a vehicle for virtuosic technique as much as it was a piece that was interested in creating a mood and a feeling. And I don't think that's surprising to people today, but it was very revolutionary for its time. And it premiered in Russia in 1907 and then was seen in 1909 in Paris. And it comes after the arrival of Isadora Duncan in St. Petersburg in 1904. She went there, and Fokine was so taken with what she called her absolute dance. It was dance for dance sake, that he got rid of a lot of the classical pantomime and even the idea of a story, so to speak.
Like Swan Lake.
Yes,
we might think
yes.
of that as
mm-hmm.
the story, and it's got very rigid rules.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, and characters.
Mm-hmm.
This is simply a ballet about a poet who is visited by these sylphs of inspiration. And it's a happy ballet, I think, too. If you're used to Giselle or Swan Lake, they have kind of dark sections to them. But Sylphides, when I danced Sylphides, I always thought of the sylphs as lightning bugs around me, just little blinking inspiration on and off. And I think that the sylphs are fascinated by having discovered someone they feel is worthy of their inspiration, and then the human who is taking in everything they have to say and responding to it in his poetry.
So yeah. We will be seeing for State of La Danse a very important seminal piece of ballet.
Yes.
Happening, I mean,
yeah.
1907 in Russia. Uh-huh. And then, as you said, the version you're doing came out in Paris in 1909.
Mm-hmm.
That's several years before World War I.
Yes.
Pretty amazing.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Now, Bree is an alum of this program, so you went through several State of La Danses, I guess, and performed in some of these classic pieces and observed many of them. What did that do to your development as a dancer to be able to see these pieces brought to life and to participate?
Well, I not only performed them as a college student, but I was also performing in high school. I would come and audition for State of La Danse, and it's so wonderful to learn all this classic choreography and to be able to pass it on to your students. So now I have students that came and auditioned for Les Sylphides, and now they're performing in it as well.
pretty amazing. And what does it do to your own choreography? Is it an inspiration to your choreography? Do you find yourself thinking back to some of these classic pieces and either, I guess, doing homages to them or responding in a different way?
Right. So I've done a contemporary ballet piece, and using all of this classical ballet, I get to push the rules and, yeah.
So you have
really
an interesting
fun.
Relationship with your own choreography, having danced in and studied these old pieces, but yet very revolutionary pieces at the turn of the last century. So a pretty interesting opportunity that you have here at the university. Now, who is directing Les Sylphides? Who is
Marie Broussard? Okay, has restaged it after a lot of research.
I was going to say that creates a lot of challenges, doesn't it? Because we don't have video, I guess, of the 1909 performance, no recording of that. So what is she working with? What does she find? What kind of research do you find to be able to recreate that dance?
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly there are books available. Balanchine had a book called The Stories of the Great Ballets, and Sylphides was included in it. And Alexandra Danilova was dancing in it, and it's so humorous to read. At least it is to me. That apparently all the critics didn't like Sylphides when it performed, and Danilova dismissed them by saying that great artists were at least 25 years ahead of their time, and so you couldn't expect people to understand.
Excellent
the
greatness attitude.
Of what they were seeing.
Shouldn't mind those critics.
But it's such a unique opportunity for students. I don't know anyone else in the state, schools, that are doing productions this size of these classic works.
Mm-hmm. So how many dancers are in Les Sylphides?
I believe there are 18, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And what are the costumes like? You know, I think some people think, 1909, are they still wearing those big white tutus? What are they, how are they dressed?
It is a ballet blanc, so they are still wearing the classical length white tutu. And because they are such diaphanous creatures, they also have these wings on the backs of their costume as though they were capable of flight.
So there's still elements of that. We would recognize that shape of costume, but just it's a much more fluid dance without those classic stories and more rigid rules of earlier dances.
Yes, they still hung on to that. You know, the feeling of the effortlessness of the dance is still there in the Romantic period.
Okay.
And I'm sure Bree will tell you, anyone that has danced these effortless-looking ballets knows they are tough. I would describe it as saying there's nowhere to hide. Either you've got it or you don't. It's all very evident in these ballets. And that, of course, is part of their greatness as well.
Mm. If you are just tuning in, we're talking about this year's State of la Danse, which opens this Thursday. My guest Kenneth Jenkins is describing Les Sylphides, which is being directed by Marie Broussard. Mm-hmm. Lots of dancers, some young dancers from high school, who have this incredible opportunity to experience this classic piece, as will we all this weekend. So, Bree, what you're a teacher now, obviously, so you have to mix both teaching and your professional life as a choreographer.
Mm-hmm.
When you were invited to be a guest choreographer for this State of la Danse, how did you begin thinking about a piece that you wanted to create? What was important to you?
Right. Well, I was thinking about what my audience would need right now, and I kept coming across this idea of unity. So that's where it all began, and my piece is called Humanity, and I'm really concentrating on the unity in humanity. They're all dressed in different color purple, long dresses, and that's to represent the different shades. And
You know, that's interesting that you say that, because I know we've had Kenneth on a number of times talking about the students, and actually have had other choreographers. And that seems to be very important to this program, that students do respond to the world around them, that mm-hmm. that dance is it can be ethereal, it can be without a story or a particular mm-hmm. idea, but so many of the students realize that they can use the power of dance to comment on, to touch people about what's happening in the world as well. So you seem to have acquired that from that program as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a lot about seeing someone in need and helping them if you are able to. Mm-hmm. If you see mm-hmm. something, help them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have some of your students in it, or are there some of the students here in the dance program? How many?
All in the dance program, okay. And they are wonderful. So okay. eager to learn, these mm-hmm. girls.
Mm-hmm. So the program that you experienced is still as strong.
It is.
Yeah.
Getting stronger.
Yeah. Well, and so the title of your piece again is
Humanity.
Dressed in purple, different shades of purple. Yeah. And did you choose a particular type of music for that piece?
His name is Gabriel Proko 5, and I used it as a challenge to myself. He sort of starts off a rhythm, and then he'll start a different rhythm and go, and it bleeds into each other, so it's a little hard to dance to, but I tried to find a way to dance between the two.
And Kenneth, how are your dancers responding to Bree's choreography?
They're loving it. They're mm-hmm. loving it. I think because of a couple of things. I think when we commission work, say from Bree, I don't give them any parameters at all other than you're invited to come make art here, and whatever you want to do is fine with me. And maybe it's because of that approach that all of our choreographers seem to be very invested in the transformative value in art. And I'm glad to see that they don't take that too far. I don't think they're ever thinking of it to the point of changing the world mm-hmm. or anything like that. But they do want a transformative experience for the viewer, that you come into the theater and for an hour and a half, 2 hours, you can leave outside shootings and hurricanes and politics and on and on and on, and just be reminded of all the good in life, I think, and have that reinforced. We all know it's there, but this is an opportunity for us to reinforce our own awareness mm-hmm. in the audience of so maybe it just lasts for a couple of hours, or maybe they think about it on the drive home, or tomorrow afternoon they think about
But it seems like it would really strengthen our sense of the ability of humans to create and transform,
yes.
and that no matter what is happening around, we're not stuck in one place, that we always can take what is around us and transform it into something
yeah.
beautiful, something constructive, something different, something that gets us to a different
mm-hmm.
place. So that is the power mm-hmm. of dance and other forms of art. If you are just tuning in, we're talking about State of La Danse. It's the 24th annual
Correct.
State of La Danse this fall. It opens this Thursday, and performances will be in Angel Hall
That's correct.
Auditorium. There are a number of guest choreographers, including Bree Castro, who is with us here, and she is an alum of the program. Who are some of the other artists who will be presenting pieces, Kenneth?
Okay. Claire Cook is doing a fascinating project. She is doing an updated version of Massine's Parade that debuted in Paris in 1917 with the Ballet Russe under Diaghilev, who was just leaving Russia because of the Russian Revolution in 1917 and coming back to Paris. There had been some tours prior to 1917, but in 1917, he brings Russian ballet back to Paris. And ballet had left France with the French Revolution, you know, and sometimes people will say, well, why didn't the ballet go to England or Spain or Germany or someplace like that? And I think the idea is that there had been the American Revolution, and then there was 1776, 1789 was the French Revolution. And so ballet was looking around for a more permanent home. And even though we think of Russia as part of Europe these days, back then it was thought of as part of Asia, and travel was very difficult. And the Russian court was very interested in trade with Europe, and so they invited ballet to come to Russia, and that's where all of the great, the Bolshoi and the Kirov and the Mariinsky Theater were all created for the Tsar. And none of that returned until 1917 with when the Russian Revolution came.
What a great history lesson right there, Kenneth. I don't think any of us had any idea that that's how it happened.
Yes, and that was and so this is a major piece. Cocteau was actually driving an ambulance in Belgium during the war, and he would come back to Paris on leave to work on this piece. The scores by Eric Satie, Picasso, Pablo Picasso did the costuming and the sets and created a grand drape, especially for the event. And to just imagine those minds together.
Just in the neighborhood.
Yeah. and that they did it during a war, a horrific war, is just amazing to me. And so Claire is doing a 21st century. That was 1917, so now it's 100 years later. And she is looking at it through a new lens, and is embracing some technological advances that I'm sure, if those artists had been aware of, they would have been using.
Mm-hmm.
I believe so. We're really looking forward to that, and she's working with Ashley Lachelet, who is here at the university on the architecture faculty.
How wonderful. Collaborative as always.
Mm-hmm.
Well, State of La Danse will have how many performances? You open Thursday.
Four.
Mm-hmm. So opens Thursday and runs through the weekend in Angèle Hall. You can get tickets at the door or online. What's the best
They're
way?
They're only available at the door this year. All so right. You might want to give yourself a couple of extra minutes.
Okay. So probably an hour beforehand, the doors will open and the ticket booth will open as well. For information, you can go to the School of Music and Performing Arts, where our Facebook page,
mm-hmm.
State of La Danse probably has a Facebook page.
Yes.
Okay. So you can look up State of La Danse, and there will be times and location and all that information as well. This is the 24th annual State of La Danse, but as you were saying, Kenneth, dance has been here at UL when it was SLII back in 1900. And some very forward-thinking people started modern dance, modern ballet here at the university. So pretty amazing. And alums like Bree are a part of that grand tradition, and now they're passing on their skills and knowledge that they learned in this program as well. Kenneth Jenkins is the coordinator of the dance program through the School of Music and Performing Arts. Bree Castro is an alum and a teacher now, and a guest choreographer for State of La Danse this year, doing a piece called Humanity. So we'll all get a wonderful glimpse into her talent and her view expressed through dance this weekend. Kenneth, thank you for your hard work with all of these dancers over the years and being so articulate about what your mission is and what you all do in that program. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Now, a look at what's happening in the arts and culture in South Louisiana. Cane Fire Film Series is showing a film at the Acadiana Center for the Arts this evening. You can find out more by going to their Facebook page, Cane Fire Film, on Facebook. And it also is a part of the Southern Screen Festival. So if you have a pass for that, I believe it's a part of the festival. At the Hilliard University Art Museum this Wednesday, as a part of their Creative Conversations program, there will be live music with guitarist Jeff George and the UL School of Music. The performances will be responding to current exhibits on display at the museum. All are invited to attend this performance from 6 to 8 p.m. The museum is open every Wednesday until 8 o'clock in the evening, so it gives people an opportunity to see the exhibits. The Acadiana Repertory Theater continues its run of Logan Faust's play, A Plague of Frogs. It will run Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 at Cité des Arts. For further information, you can go to their website or their Facebook page for Acadiana Rep. Also on Wednesday, the traditional music program here at UL Lafayette will have a bluegrass to blues concert in Burke Hawthorne Theater. That's at 7:30. It will feature the Vermilion Express, the Bluegrass Band, and the Ragin' Blues Band led by Corey Ledet. For more information, you can go to the School of Music website, but that's this Wednesday, the 15th, 7:30 in Burke Hawthorne Theater. The Acadiana Symphony Orchestra will have a concert this Thursday in the Hyman Center called Gershwin Spectacular. It features guest pianist Christopher Goodposture and will feature lots of American and Gershwin music. You can find out more by going to acadianasymphony.org. And the Jambalaya, the musical, will be at the Hyman Center this week as well. For more information, you can look up Jambalaya, the musical, and we'll be speaking with Jackie Lyle later on this week about that. And there will be a special benefit for a patron of Louisiana music, Kate Vivian, and that will be for a special memorial fund. And the event will be this Thursday at Warehouse 535. Doors will open at 6 o'clock. All are invited. In Lake Charles at Westlake High Theater, the play The Monkey's Paw will be performed 7 o'clock, November 16th. It's one performance only. For information, you can call the school's box office at Westlake High. And there will be, again, the State of La Danse opening up this Thursday, the 16th. Performances will be Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30, Sunday at 2. All performances in Angel Hall Auditorium. The Southern Screen Festival begins on Thursday, the 16th. You can go to southernscreen.org for a complete listing of films, activities, events that will take place over the 16th through the 19th. On Saturday, November 18th, there will be a performance by Gerd Wüstemann, classical guitarist, and Sasha Massey. They will be performing together some of their favorite pieces, and that performance will be Saturday, November 18th, 7 o'clock in Cathedral Hall at the Cathedral of St. John the Evangelist. It is open to everyone. This week, Friday, November 17th, at the Hilliard, there will be an artist talk with Francis Pavi from 6 to 8 p.m. For more information, you can contact the Hilliard University Art Museum. And for a listing of programs on KRVS, please stop by our website, krvs.org, clicking on the schedule button. You can listen to audio on demand of all of our locally produced programs, search for the program you're interested in and the date, and you can listen to it on any device that you get to krvs.org on. You can share that link with friends and family who may not have heard the show or just want to enjoy it again. Please stay with us this afternoon and evening. We're with NPR's All Things Considered from 4 until 6. From 6 to 7, Terry Gross hosts Fresh Air. At 7 o'clock, we begin our evening of classical music until 11, at which time you can hear Japan Jukebox. In just a moment, we join NPR's All Things Considered.
Journey with me to the far-flung regions of the world, where we'll explore world music with a focus on the harp in all its various forms. That's Harpistry, Monday at noon and Sundays at midnight on KRVS.
We're Cody and Danny Hills, and we're scouring the land of the rising sun to bring you the best in Japanese rock music. Catch us every Monday night at 11 p.m. and Saturday mornings at 3 a.m. on Japan Jukebox, right here on KRVS 88.7 FM.
This is listener-supported public radio for Acadiana, KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles. Like us on Facebook at KRVS